Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're talking about home improvement today on the show and taking a look at, among other things, what to consider, what steps to take when getting your home ready for winter. Chad Spate back with us. He's the owner of Chad's Design Build. Chad, good to have you back.
Thanks, Larry. It's always great to be here.
Joining him today, John Viner is the Director of Education at Slipstream and is a heating, cooling, and weatherization specialist. And John Viner, welcome back.
Yeah, thanks, Larry. Thanks for the invite. Really appreciate it.
Well, I tell you what, it's good to have you back. What questions do you have as you listen to these two experts talk? What do you want to know about preparing your home for winter? Other kinds of questions, I hope you'll join in at 800-642-1234, or you can send us an email to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Well, we've had a pretty mild fall overall, but I'm sure that's not going to last forever. What should we be on our home to-do list before winter weather sets in? John, maybe we'll start with you. What do you think, John Viner?
All right. Thanks, Larry. As we get into winter and we're starting to button up our homes, right, we're closing the windows, making sure that the leaks are getting sealed up. But this all brings about the need for ventilation, right? And as we all work from home a little bit, or many of us work from home more, kids are going to school from home. I just want to place a little bit of an emphasis on the need for fresh air in the house, right? And ventilation, even though we typically would start out a conversation about making the home more airtight and insulating it correctly. I just want to bring this conversation to the forefront that, you know, at the same time, we need to have a healthy indoor environment. Sometimes that really requires making sure we understand how we're going to bring fresh air into the house.
Yeah, that makes sense. John, your radio may be up. You might want to, if it is, turn that down a little bit. I'm going to turn to Chad Spate for a second. Chad, what are your thoughts about things to do before winter weather sets in?
Sure. Well, another thing that we always talk about is making sure we keep the house dry or as dry as possible, and that's water management. So, you know, making sure that your gutters and your downspouts are free of debris, that water is getting away from the foundation, that we're, disconnecting hoses from spigots. And then I would agree certainly with John that thinking about indoor air quality is really important. And it really depends on how old your house is and what has been done to the house as to whether or not, your house is one that gets a lot of fresh air somewhat accidentally because it's a leaky house with not good air sealing as part of that exterior envelope, or perhaps you have a house that was built quite tight, and that tight home may have some issues of its own. So we have to, really address each house where we find it.
Yeah, and the ventilation probably, as we go into winter with COVID and everything else, I think ventilation certainly is on our minds just from a health standpoint.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that health standpoint, yeah, sometimes that's certainly, we think of energy efficiency and reducing our costs, but I just want to throw, it might be that when we increase ventilation, which is important, and we're going to increase some costs, and maybe there we should prepare for some of that, depending on, for people at home, we're not going to have the setbacks of our thermostats as we operate our heating system, maybe quite as much if there's more people home more part of the day. And then increasing ventilation due to the health reasons it does drive up costs. So not that I want to spend the whole show talking about increased costs. We'll get to how to reduce them as well.
Well, we have, you know, I just had my furnace company come in and check my furnace out as we're going into the season. I always think that's a good idea to have a professional come in. But what about heating systems? What should we be checking and looking for to make sure you're working, they're working, and ready for the season? I certainly appreciate what I get from the heating contractors that come visit me.
Yeah, that's a great. Yeah, go ahead, yeah. Chad.
Yeah, well, so one thing that we see in a lot of our clients' homes is if you look around in the lower level, you'll find some dampers that have been specifically designed to position in either the winter mode or the summer mode. And this has to do with how we want to balance the airflow and how airflow needs can change, whether we're cooling a house or heating a house. And so, you know, certainly a lot of people don't even realize or notice these things in their basement, but we see it all the time. Dampers that have been specifically designed to maximize airflow for the season. So look around in your basement and see if you have dampers that are labeled for summer and winter, and make sure you put them in the winter position now that we're approaching that time of year.
Yeah, that makes good sense. Well, Frank in Brown Deer has a question that I think relates to insulation, perhaps. Let's see. Frank in Brown Deer, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Good morning, Larry. My question is, a few years ago, I did some insulation in my house, and I insulated the attic pretty good. Now, what I noticed in the last few years is I have a front window that at nighttime, it does a lot of moisture. Like, usually we have to take a couple of towels to wipe it down. So I don't know what to do about that.
Well, John, you want to take a crack at that? Chad, let's go to you.
Sure. You know, one of the things that we are needing to control for in a home, other than the temperature, would be the humidity. And what we often see as we make our houses tighter and more energy efficient is that they also tend to have a higher relative humidity, which is also a natural thing for a heated home. The heated air in a conditioned home has a lot more capacity for moisture. And as air gets colder, it can hold less and less moisture. And so what will happen, the house is not as leaky, perhaps, as it used to be when you did the air sealing and insulating in the attic. And now that air, both the heat and the moisture, is sitting there in the upper level, and there's a lot of pressure that's pushing that air naturally to expel from the house. And so it's going to go to those windows, which are the coldest surface, and we often see condensation. So there are a couple of things we want to do. We want to probably ventilate the top level of the home. Often a high efficiency fan in a hallway bathroom is an excellent solution to draw some air out of the house up at the top. And if it's a high efficiency fan, it will do that without consuming too much electricity. You don't have to worry about a little bit of heat loss that you're going to have because you're doing this primarily to help control the moisture and just the overall air quality of the home. So that's That's probably the first thing that I would look at. And then there may be some other things you want to look at to reduce the amount of moisture that's in the home, you know, ways to control it. Sometimes the number of house plants and pets can really overload the moisture in the home. And then we might want to look at some higher tech solutions to both provide fresh air and control the amount of humidity.
So a few things there to consider, Frank. Thank you very much for calling and good luck. Appreciate your call. You can join in too, by the way. You can reach us at 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. A listener called in, couldn't stay online, but wonders what kind of spigots are good and insulation necessary for winter for the outdoor lines. And John, do you want to take a crack at that?
Yeah, thanks, Larry. I guess I know that from a water spigot that runs through your basement and sticks to outside the foundation or the rim wall, they have special ones that have antifreeze control. I think they extend, you know, whether it's a foot or 18 inches back into the basement. And obviously it's just water pipe insulation stuck onto that on your water pipe, certainly anywhere where they run near the exterior foundation. I don't have specific brands or maybe the technical terminology for that. Maybe Chad has more information.
Chad, do you have anything to add there?
No, I mean, John, I mean, you're correct. I mean, that's essentially, there are spigots that are designed for cold weather climate, and we retrofit these all the time on people's homes when they have issues with pipes freezing. Another thing that you can do is simply to install a shutoff valve on, you know, inside the home or inside the building. If for whatever reason it's problematic to replace the spigot, but if you can put in a shutoff valve and, you know, this time of year, go ahead and shut that off and, you know, drain it out on the outside, then that will also be a way to solve the problem.
Yeah, I've got two spigots outside in my home, and I have those shutoff valves inside. So that's a little, once I'm done watering, that's what I do. I go downstairs and turn that water off downstairs, then go back up and just turn the spigot on to see if it's, if I did it properly.
And, right. Yep.
And then I'm good to go until the next spring. It works really pretty well, and it takes a matter of, you know, seconds to do it. So
it's definitely the safest approach for sure.
Let's take another call in just a second. Just a reminder, our guests today are Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build and John Viner. John directs education at Slipstream and is a heating, cooling, and weatherization specialist. Jane Rotunda, our producer today. Tyler Ditter, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at home improvement on the show today. Is your home ready for the winter? Our guests, Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build and John Viner of Slipstream. Great to have both of them with us. And you can join in, 800-642-1234. Email at ideas@WPR.org. Let's take another call. Aaron in Silver Lake, it's your turn. Hi, Aaron. Thank you for calling.
Yes, good afternoon. Thanks for taking the call. I got a question. You just mentioned the damper situation for ductwork, and I have tried that in the summertime. I have a 1971 house. It's got the galvanized ductwork downstairs in a finished basement area. Well, I've taken out the drop ceiling and put in drywall. Those ductworks, when I use the air conditioning, sweat in the summertime. Of course, I've used dehumidifier and all that. But what made it worse was closing off those dampers, because I don't need the AC downstairs. And they sweat, and of course, you know, that's going to create a problem on my ceiling. So what do I do about that?
John, you want to...
Also, what may exacerbate the problem...
Aaron, we're losing you. Let's see if we can answer that part of the question. John, you want to give a shot?
Sure. So ductwork that's sweating in the air conditioning mode and getting wet. Sometimes it is we can wrap that ductwork. What's happening on the outside of the ductwork is that basement is really moist and the ductwork is really cold, and the surface of that ductwork is now below the dew point of the basement air. So the basement moisture is condensing on that cold galvanized sheet metal. So we need to either lower the humidity within that basement, which is keeping it warmer, or dehumidify. And a dehumidifier might be, if Aaron isn't running a dehumidifier, that might be the first recommendation, is to lower that humidity within that basement area so that it doesn't condense out on that cold ductwork.
Yeah, that makes sense. Good luck, Aaron. Thank you for calling. Paul in West Bend, it's your turn. Hi, Paul.
Yeah, I'm calling about our COVID environment and air exchange in our homes, and I'm particularly wondering about hot air heating equipment, how that can be set to have more air exchange in this kind of environment with fresh air coming in, and also what kind of filters are available that might be most effective to take out some of this COVID-related issues, too.
Yeah. Chad, you want to take a crack at that?
Sure. Well, thanks for the call. It's a great question. I mean, you know, when you go to purchase a filter, if you have just a standard, you know, 1-inch thick filter, you're going to have a lot of options. And the higher the number on the rating of that filter, the more it's filtering out. And John might be able to speak to this even more than I, but, you know, there are the kind of the highest level of filtration will be capturing the smallest particles in the air. But it also, you know, the downside to having a really great filter is that there's more air resistance. And so there's always a trade-off between airflow and filtration. And the other thing that we have to mention that I'm not sure we said earlier, and it's part of maintaining your heat system if you have forced air, absolutely, now is the time to change your filter so that you have a cleaner filter that's going to be more effective allowing air to flow through it. And then, come the middle of winter, we consider changing that filter again, so that the filter is able to do its job.
Yeah, I have a whole box of filters. I usually buy, they come 10 or something in a box, and I usually buy them that way. And then I mark on the box each time I take one out, the month and date. And then yep. I try to change it every month. I don't know if that's...
Oh, wow.
Just because I think it's... Well, I'm more trying to be cautious, I guess is what I'm trying to be. Yeah. John, anything to add?
Yeah, I think the caller also mentioned about air exchange and bringing fresh air into the house and how we might be able to do that. And there's a variety of ways. And I, at this point, without knowing more, I would just recommend having the heating contractor take a look at ways to bring in fresh air and have more air exchange within the building. Related to filters, certainly depending on the filter, some in the home Larry, going once a month and replacing it is just getting into that habit is a great way just simply to protect the equipment. Oftentimes the 1-inch filters, that's all about protecting the equipment from an air filtration standpoint, and you can get into 4- and 6-inch pleated filters that are a little bit wider that can glow, last a little bit longer without changing them out.
Paul, thanks again for calling. Appreciate it. Let's take a call from Pat in Elm Grove next. Hi, Pat.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. We're having our boiler replaced, and the installer is suggesting zone pumps instead of our present zone valves. What's your opinion on that?
Zone pumps. Chad, you want to start? Or John? Go ahead, John.
Yeah, John.
I guess when it comes to boilers, it's where I have the least experience. So I don't know if I'm not really, I guess I'll say I'm not qualified to answer that. I don't have a good answer. Sorry about that. I don't know. Maybe Chad has something to contribute.
Honestly, off the top of my head, I don't. I mean, we rely on our heating contractor for that sort of information. And that's, I don't recall encountering that particular option before.
Oh, so you better check with your heating contractor again on that, and Pat, and see what that person has to say. Thank you for calling. Tony in Egg Harbor, your turn now. Hi, Tony.
Good morning, everyone. Great show. 45 years in the business of HVAC, so I got a lot to say. I'll condense it down to a Reader's Digest version. The solution to pollution is dilution. And the more that the water particulate can be diluted, the better. And in a residential situation where, you know, the people that are in the house are the people you live with, I'm not as concerned as I am in a commercial building where you don't know who is in that building. So in commercial applications, the minimum code is 15%. I would go to 50% outside air and increase your exhaust equally. There's two other measures that we're using in the commercial market today, and that's the introduction of ultraviolet light C, and they put these lamps right in the air handling unit, and then also the additional introduction of ionization equipment that add positive ions to the air that will also cling on to volatile organic compounds like the coronavirus, and then it will dissolve it and knock it down. So commercially, if you're working in a commercial building, I think it would be responsible to talk to the building management and ask them, what are we doing in our building to protect us, and are we doing proper air filtration, air exchange, UVC, ionization? And in a home, I think if you just do good planned preventative maintenance, especially now we're getting into the winter where we're not going to have as much air exchange, I think you're pretty safe.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. Any comment, Chad?
Well, that was great. I was just thinking about how wonderful it is to have listeners like that who call in, and that was great advice.
Yeah, Tony, thank you very much for calling. Roseanne in Madison will turn to you next. Hi, Roseanne.
Hello there. I have a question for you, you guys about mold on my chimney. It's porous brick. The eaves for the chimney, or the eaves for the roof, kind of butt up to the chimney, so there's always water dripping down, and they get kind of black and green with mold, and I'm wondering what the best way to get rid of that is.
Is Chad?
Mold on the exterior, I take it on the exterior of the chimney?
Yes, correct.
Okay. Well, do you have a shaded, is the chimney mostly in the shade, or?
Yep, very much so, yep.
Okay, yeah. So, I'm not sure exactly what I might recommend. I can't say that I've encountered that particular problem, but certainly, you know, the fact that the chimney's not drying out, we might look at some potential flashing that might be able to be installed to try to divert water in some places to reduce the moisture loads on the brick. And, you know, maybe if it's an extreme and difficult problem, we might look at some ways to do some sealing on the exterior of that masonry surface, again, to reduce the moisture load. But that's a, you know, it sounds like something that we'd have to look at.
I wonder, you know, there are zinc strips that are used across the top of roofs to kind of deal with it. I don't know if there are strips like that that fit on chimneys.
Mm-hmm. So this is all from an aesthetic point of view. It's on the exterior of the house, and we just want to make it look better. And getting rid of that mold could be just, I don't know if anybody's tried or if it's safe enough to just soap and water to get it off. Has anybody tried to scrub it off and be done with it?
Yeah, it's probably a pain to do, but it's relatively easy, I think, to remove that way. And then maybe some of Chad's ideas would come into play then in terms of keeping that chimney from staying so moist. Roseanne, good luck. Thank you for calling. Wayne in Lodi, it's your turn. Hi, Wayne.
Hello, Larry. Thanks for taking my call. I've got not an immediate solution for the green and black mold, because I pressure wash homes that get a lot of it on. And I mix Dawn dish soap and some bleach in a nice big bucket of water, and I apply that and scrub it and rinse it off, and it's gone. And it'll stay gone for up to 2 years.
There you go.
So,
thank
so
you. Thank you very much, Wayne. Yeah, that certainly sounds reasonable to me. You can join in, too. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Susanna emailed, the front and back doors of their home need new weather stripping. Is it something she can do herself? What skills and tools would she need, Chad?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So if she has a newer style door jamb, then there's a groove that the weather stripping that was on the door would get reinstalled into. And that's a weather stripping that can be replaced. And that groove is literally in the jamb. So that's something that a homeowner might be able to do. An older style door might have some copper weather stripping on it. That's a more delicate and complicated thing to work on. And then many doors, older doors, have no real weather stripping at all. And so often you can retrofit that using either an adhesive style weather strip that might be appropriate, but you do have to be careful to size it properly. Often the best type of retrofit weather strip is applied directly inside the jamb, and you can apply it when the door is closed, and that way you know exactly where it needs to be placed, and it's often either nailed or screwed into the jamb, and it's going to be some sort of a rubber or vinyl or possibly felt material that's contacting the door. And you want to make sure that the door is not unable to close properly. You don't want too much pressure pushing up against that door, but you do want to make sure once the door is latched that you do have contact between that, the weather seal and the door.
Makes good sense. Let's go to another caller, Marty in Duluth, Minnesota. Hi, Marty. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks, Larry. Say, we took out a, well, by we, I mean my husband and a friend, took out about a 4-foot by 4-foot wood frame, single pane, thermo pane window last year. It weighs about 8 million pounds. It's been stored in a shed. And we're wondering how to dispose of it. My idea to lay out a tarp and carefully lay the window down, carefully break it, gather up the pieces in the tarp, and dispose of that is being met with a lot of, negativity. Have you got any suggestions? It's kind of the handling of it and the weight of it is really going to be the challenge.
So we got a 4-by-5 window to dispose of. Chad, what do you do?
Yeah. Well, so I definitely can understand the dilemma, and I would say that probably if you have an old tarp, something like that, that you can wrap around both below it and on top of it prior to potentially breaking up the glass and then maybe cutting up the frame. You know, you're going to have to be very cautious with all of that, you know, wear the proper equipment on top of using things to essentially cover the glass and collect the glass as you're breaking it up. I'm always... It's one thing to dispose of old things, and that may be what it's called for here. There may not be anyone that would want to utilize that, but I am a big fan of taking something old and listing it on Craigslist or something like that. And, if someone is willing to simply come and pick it up that might have a use for it, that's another way to dispose of something and allow it to have another life. So those would be my two recommendations.
There you go, Marty. Thank you so much for calling. Mark in Wauwatosa, your turn. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Larry. Yeah, a little bit back, you had a caller who had a chimney with some mold on it. You had another caller with a good practice of cleaning the mold off. I'm a restoration mason and a certified chimney sweep, well, kind of newly in 10 years in the business and finally got some certification. But we see this pretty often, especially after rainy periods. And you know, when you got wet chimneys, it pretty much start from the top down. And you mentioned sealing up the chimney and flashing at the base, and that's important. I always want to look at that concrete crown up on top. Some chimneys don't even have them, or they kind of get removed in the life of a chimney, or maybe somebody shortens a chimney and they don't bother to replace the crown. But you want to definitely have that overhang, as I know your experts are well aware. You want to have that overhang and make sure it's got that undercut drip edge under it, so the water rolls around from the rain. It doesn't just keep moving towards the brickwork or the stonework and saturating it. A lot of times the guys will cut corners and they'll pour that concrete, if it's a concrete crown, as a lot of them are, they'll just pour that concrete right up against the clay flue. Bad idea, because it's always going to give you a gap and it's going to cause freeze-thaw damage and it's going to bust things up. And then, you know, that chimney is going to store water. So, you know, there's some fast ways we can address it sometimes. There are coatings we can use on top of it. They're pretty good. New crowns are great, but they're costlier. Sometimes we'll even put steel drip edge right underneath that crown, as long as everything above it is sealed with the coating. And we can even do a quarter-inch coating is even available to the chimney technicians, that, about a quarter-inch thick. You can brush it on, and it'll give you this resilient kind of remain resilient and go right up to the concrete or right up to the clay flue and give you that protection, even though somebody probably poured that concrete all the way up to it. So, you know, it's one way of compensating for, you know, bad practices in the past.
Oh, Mark, some good comments there.
That was excellent.
Yeah, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Well, we'll take another call. Karen in Wauwega next. Hi, Karen. Karen, are you there? She was wondering, I believe, if there are any programs available to low-income houses for new furnace changeouts. Are there any that you guys, John, anything you know?
Yeah, there are income-eligible programs, weatherization programs, certainly in Wisconsin. So I would, whether it's Googling Wisconsin weatherization programs, or there's an acronym, I think it's LIHEAP, LIHEAP. I think with some simple Googling or searching on the internet, you can find that resource. I don't have it at my fingertips, but there certainly are income-eligible programs for furnace replacement.
Excellent. Karen, there you go. I hope you were able to hear that. Chad, you were going to add something?
Well, and I was just going to add, you know, if the caller doesn't have internet access, I would also say that the local library is a great resource. And even though now with COVID, you're basically going to be making a phone call and probably talking to someone there on the phone, that might be a way to get some additional information or phone numbers as well.
Thank you again for calling. Alan in Augusta, your turn. Hi, Alan.
I had heard the caller say to mix Dawn and bleach, and unless they changed, original Dawn contains ammonia. You do not mix ammonia and bleach because it creates a nerve gas, which is very dangerous. I say I've done janitorial, and we used to clean with bleach, and I noticed sometimes I would spray bathroom basins and there would be this funny smell. I finally picked up their antibacterial soap bottle and it said it contained ammonia, and I'm like, that's what that smell is. Because pretty much I was mixing ammonia and bleach. You do not do that.
All right. So Dawn or whatever other cleaner you use, you want to make sure if you're mixing with bleach that it does not contain ammonia. There we go. Thank you so much. Our guests, Chad Spade and John Viner. John directs education at Slipstream. Chad Spade owns Chad's Design Build. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at home improvement. Is your home ready for winter? Larry Mueller here with Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build, John Viner of Slipstream. Great to have both of them with us today. And certainly, if you have a question, we have some open lines. We'll get you on fairly quickly at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. And let's take a call. Grant in Stoughton, it's your turn. Hi, Grant. Thank you for calling.
Well, thanks, Larry. This is really a no-brainer, but I don't have a brain these days. Anyway, I am trying to figure out which direction to put my filter in my unit. It's supposed to be in, you know, a direction of flow, airflow, and basically I've got a York heater, you know, and I've got a duct coming in, and I'm kind of thinking that the airflow would be coming from the duct going into the unit. Is that the way the air flows, or does it flow from the unit out that duct?
Okay. You know, that's something that I've scratched my head once in a while, too, on. Chad, a comment?
Sure.
Or John? Well, either way.
Well, you know,
John had made the point earlier, which I thought was a very good one, that, you know, the filter is, other than filtering the air, which is important, it's also protecting the equipment. And that is a really important function of a filter. And so it is true that the filter is all, the air is flowing through that return duct, through the filter into the equipment. Or, you know, into the furnace. So, and there should be an arrow on the side of a filter. So that arrow should be pointing towards your furnace. And that, I think that answers the question. But John may have something to add. He's really the HVAC expert. But
No, that's, I mean, we do have ductwork. We have air that goes into the furnace and out the furnace, and we want that filter on the where it enters the furnace. Usually it's low on the furnace, and as Chad said, the filters are usually marked. If it's not marked on the filter, which way the airflow is going to go, maybe it's indifferent, but generally you're right. There'd be an arrow marking the direction, and we'd put that filter ahead of the airstream or ahead of that burn.
Yeah, so the arrow has to point at the furnace.
Furnace.
There we go. That's an easy way to remember it, actually. Grant, thanks. Appreciate it. I bet you there are a lot of people that thought, oh, that's what we should be redoing. Oh, man. Ray in Rosendale, your turn. Hi, Ray.
I have a problem with mice coming under my doors in my garage, both the big doors and the small walk-through door. And I have rubber vinyl thing on the bottom of the door, but they've chewed right through it. Is there something that's mouse-proof for that application?
I'm trying to think. Nothing's coming to my mind.
A mouse can get through the smallest opening. And so while it's certainly great if you have gaskets or thresholds which seal up when a door is closed, and that may in fact do the trick, I've rarely seen a garage door in particular that I felt like was mouse-proof. I'm not sure what to recommend there, because certainly, barring having something that's going to become a trip hazard for humans, there are limits to what can be done.
Yeah, I can't think of anything. John, have you ever thought of anything?
No, we just want to make sure that gasket, of course, is in good shape, and maybe it's older and needs to be replaced. So we need to look at the integrity of that, the rubber gaskets on both those doors, and make sure that we don't see daylight through it. And maybe often there's a little adjustments that could be created. Outside that, it's a mouse trap.
Yeah, a mouse trap on the other side of the garage door, and just don't step on it yourself when you come through in or out. Oh, my goodness me. Ray, thanks. You're not the only one with that problem. I'm pretty sure of that. Thank you for calling. Carol in Northern Illinois, your turn. Hi, Carol.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for the program. I always like to listen to this. We have windows that are 32 years old in our house, and the ones that are on the west and south side, like 4 to 6, need replacement, but every time I call, it when they find out you don't want a whole house, they don't want to come out. So, and they won't say that, but I'm just one. And what's a good brand? Because we know Anderson and Pelly, and there's Gilkey in the Chicagoland. So if we can find someone to do just a few, and also I've heard that the installation is where, you know, it's not just the quality of the windows, it's the installation as well. So if you could speak to that, thanks again.
Yeah, thanks for calling.
Sure. Well, so these are some great questions. And I mean, I, I guess I would recommend looking at some quality remodeling contractors, maybe not just window and door specialists, because I know most of the contractors whom I know in the Madison area, you know, do windows and doors for their clients. And, you know, I know many of us are accustomed to just doing a part of a home, not necessarily the entire home. So I think part of it is just, you know, the listing that you are looking under when you're Googling for this. I always would recommend someone that has well-trained installers, and there are certifications for window and door installation. Of course, finding someone that is a member of the National Association of the Remodeling Industry, I would recommend, I mean, because of the code of ethics. So, you know, those are all factors. As far as brands, I mean, you know, there are some great brands out there. I mean, I will say that, you know, we install a lot of Marvin window, and I do think Marvin makes an outstanding product, and they're based out of Minnesota, but they have some factories in South Dakota and Kentucky. But there are many brands. There are many, you know, there are other quality windows out there. I would be looking at the material the window's made out of. Maybe I definitely recommend fiberglass over vinyl. So hopefully those are helpful.
Yeah, and if you, I think if you go to where, let's say it's Marvin, you go to Marvin, you can go online to Marvin, and there will be a set of insulation instructions. And you can copy those instructions off, and you, whenever the person comes to install, you can hand them a copy of those instructions and say, "Here, I hope you can put them in this way, or put them in this way, and follow the recommendations of the window company itself." And I think that can be helpful as well.
Correct. And some manufacturers actually will recommend certain installers as well. And then, of course, I would always recommend speaking to some of the lumber yards in town to see who they would recommend. Who are the quality contractors that they do business with? And, you know, that can be an excellent resource.
Yeah. Good luck, Carol. Thank you. Mary in Green Bay, your turn. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Larry. And thank you, guests, for all your good advice. I'm a homeowner, and I'm dealing with some musty odors and dampness in my basement. And I want to have my ductwork cleaned, and it's time to have my furnace annual checkup for winter done also. But which of those do I do first? Do I clean the ducts, have them clean the ducts, and then have the furnace checked? Or do I have the furnace checked and then clean the ducts?
Hmm.
So that's my question. I'm trying to get rid of the damp, musty odors in the basement.
Yeah. John Viner, what do you think?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think reaching out to that heating contractor, getting a furnace checkup, and then having them help you assess, you know, where is the dampness, the moisture coming from to make it musty in the basement? And is there ways to control that? And heating contractor can help you assess that, but then also maybe make recommendations related to dehumidification at that same time. If we think that we can't get the sources of moisture under control, he could probably help along those lines, whether it's simply a standalone dehumidifier that you might look for a floor model that has an Energy Star label at any of the big box stores, or there's steps up from there. There you can get a little more sophisticated depending on, you know, the extent of the problem, right? What's driving that moisture into your basement and why is it? So I think getting him out there to look at the furnace and help you make some of those decisions would be useful.
Yeah. It makes good sense. Mary, thank you very much for calling. Dennis in Two Rivers. Hi.
Hi. I've heard that mice like to chew on some automotive wiring insulation, and I was wondering, is that also true about some household insulation or household wiring insulation? And if so, what should we do about it? I'll hang up and listen.
All right. Go ahead, Chad.
It's a great question, and I guess I want to be very honest that I don't know exactly if there's a particular wiring that mice are more attracted to, but I will say that air leaks in a home are something that is quite attractive. And so one way to maybe address the problem and solve more than one issue is by addressing air leaks in the home, so that the rodents are not finding their way to the wiring.
Yeah.
I can't say that we see the problem a lot, but of course I'm mostly in a more urban area here.
Well, we may have some more thoughts on that. I'll let our Chad Spate and Jod Miner think some more about it. But in the meantime, we'll take a quick look at the news, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network, and then we'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here talking about home improvement topics today and ways to get your home ready for winter here in the state. Our guest, Chad Spate, the owner of Chad's Design Build of Monona and Madison, and John Viner. John's the Director of Education at Slipstream and a heating, cooling, and weatherization specialist. So what home improvement questions do you have? I hope you'll join in at 800-642-1234. Give a call. And let's go to Joel in Phillips next, who has a question. Hi, Joel.
Hi, Larry. I have a question about cold air returns. Watching a home improvement show once, I saw where they had filters behind the ducts, some kind of foam, light foam filter. Is that necessary? I don't have any of those in my house.
John Viner, what do you think?
Are you talking about foam filters right at the registers or, you know, where the cold air return registers? I guess, where are the foam filters located?
Right behind the register. They're like very thin. They look like very thin black foam filters that you just.
And these
kind of
are at the supply register, maybe, where the air blows out.
No, where the cold air return, where it goes.
Okay, it is at the cold air return. We certainly want a filter. So if this is redundant or in addition to a filter right at the furnace, it probably isn't necessary if you've got a decent filter right at the furnace. They may be looking to add additional filtration and keep dust down and collect it. Is the grill, I assume, is removable so that you can clean and or replace the ones at the grills as well?
Yeah, I can take the grill off, but I have no filters in there, never did. But after seeing that, it made me wonder, do I need them? But
don't. If you have an existing filter right at the furnace, that's whether it's a 1-inch or a couple inch filter at the furnace, you wouldn't need the additional ones at the grill, but you do need some type of filtration either at the grill or at the furnace.
All right. There you go, Joel. Thank you. Helen in Duluth, Minnesota, your turn. Hi, Helen.
Hi, good morning. I have a vent up near the peak on the gable end of my house, and it also is directly like the predominating wind direction, and it wreaks havoc with my fiberglass insulation. And I'm wondering if there's some kind of a deflector that I could put over that so that it wouldn't eliminate airflow, but it would keep the wind out. I haven't found anything at my local stores, and I don't know what to call it to look online.
Well, Chad,
yeah,
what
that's
do you
a
think?
Great question, and this is a common problem. And so it is very important that when we have, soffit vents and The venting is there to flow up underneath the roof deck and up to the peak of the roof, that the insulation has to have some sort of a dam. And it's often nothing any more complicated than a piece of cardboard that is stapled up in that space to maximize the amount of insulation over top of the ceiling and the exterior wall, but allowing a path for air to flow from that overhang up into the attic space. These vents, they're sometimes referred to just as a vent chute. When they're stapled up onto the underside of the roof sheeting, and then the insulation can then be packed tightly up to that, and then the air gets to flow through that particular chute. Other times, like I say, if you have an energy heel, which is a large space for proper insulation to happen, there's plenty of room up there. Do you happen to know, have you looked up in that space, like how much space is there on, you know, when you go straight up from that exterior wall plate to the roof deck, you know, is there only 4 or 5 inches, or is there an entire foot to 18 inches? The more room you have will determine how many options you have. But I guess I would wrap up by saying that if it's a really tight space, we often will have our insulation contractor put in those ventilation chutes and then use a two-part foam to provide a very permanent insulation solution that's got a high R value and that is not going to risk blowing around right at that critical juncture where the air needs to flow for venting, but you also need to have good insulation to prevent ice damming. So depending on your specific situation, you might look to a more kind of permanent solution, and then you can still have that loose insulation over the bulk of the attic space.
So I guess I'm going to jump in. I think the caller, correct me, did you say it's on the gable end? So it's on the sidewall on a gable end of the roof?
It's near the peak, but it's under the soffit, and there is a fair amount of space. And I did, when I put the insulation in, I used the staple-on root chutes that you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And it's just that when the north wind, and of course it's got to be the cold north wind, hits the wall of the house, then this vent is maybe 11 by 14 or something, and the louvers kind of channel the wind up, which is probably what it's doing anyway, eddying against the house and going up and straight into the kind of the peak area of the attic space, and it is scissor trusses. So there is a fair amount of space that it's blowing around in.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. So right at the soffit, as Chad described, sometimes it's taking, as Chad said, there's, you know, cardboard dams or things that you would put in the soffit, assuming you can, often these are tight spaces and that you would crawl back in there on your belly to get in there. Is that the case?
No, I can't actually get up in there very well. I can take a paneling of the ceiling off and kind of stand up in there on the ladder, but there's no real way to move around. I was thinking of fabricating something out of like aluminum flashing, but if I could buy something that would be probably look better if it was on that for the exterior.
On the soft, just trying to still, so under the soffit of the eave where the vent is, where you can get up and pull the vent off, and looking for something
that
to put inside there.
Yeah, sounds like she can.
Yep. So sometimes it's taking a fiberglass bat and rolling it up super tight and squishing it and pushing it in, as Chad described, above the wall and pressing up against that vent chute that you stapled in there. And then when you let go, it expands and kind of creates a little tight barrier to stop the outdoor air rushing in through the soffit and direct it up into the chute.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. Helen, thank you. Good luck with that. Appreciate your call. Pat in Waupun, it's your turn. Hi, Pat.
Hi. I've got a comment on the person asking about the zoning for the boiler systems.
Yeah.
If it's a house that's fairly large in size and there's rooms that do not get enough heat, it might be good to zone that room out so that they can push more heat in that direction so that they can even out the temperature within the house, especially if the room is kind of exterior to the main part of the house, like a kitchen that was built way back over 100 years ago. Might be outside of the main area so that the heat from the kitchen isn't heating up the rest of the house during the summertime.
Yeah, that's good input. I mean, I guess the basic question to ask is, are they comfortable now, right? Mm-hmm. Is there a reason to change something? And if you're right, if there's that room that isn't getting enough heat, and maybe then there's solid reason to make those changes.
Yeah, good call, Pat. Thank you so much for calling. Well, Annie in Brilliant will give you a chance. Hi, Annie.
Yeah, hi. The house was built in 1968. The laundry floor and the garage floor are even. So when I step outside and I step on that piece of wood, there's another piece of wood that goes right into the earth. 3 inches deep by 2 inches, the width is 2 inches. So I was wondering, can I put cement in there to close
over the top
up?
Of the wood? Okay. Chad, what do you think?
So I'm having trouble envisioning the entire situation there. But it sounds like there's a gap that you're wanting to fill. Without seeing it, it's always a little dangerous to make a firm recommendation on something like that. But if it might be possible to use a cement infill if there's a gap between two sound areas in the building, but I might need to know a little bit more to offer good advice on that.
Yeah, I might need to have somebody to have to take a look at it, Annie, to see if that is doable. So you might want to check with a contractor in the area just to see if they can take a look at it and give you a recommendation.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for calling. Nick in Green Bay, your turn. Hi, Nick.
Hi, I've got a one stall. We call it the shed, but I call it my man cave. And it's got a heater from the ceiling. It's a natural gas. And for some reason, the blower fan won't go on. Like the other night, my daughter and I were in there watching TV, and I got mad. I punched it, and it worked fine then after that. But I was wondering if you have any suggestions on like what could make that blower motor not work. Because it seems like it overheats when the blower motor's not going, so it won't really stay on for a long time.
Hmm. John, what do you think?
Sometimes there's, there's temperature switches, safety switches, that if the blower isn't working appropriately and the heat exchanger is getting too hot, that's going to trip and prevent the blower to come on. And then ideally, I mean, that would shut down the whole gas unit. I'm not able to diagnose completely, but if you're tapping it or giving it a shove or a hit and it's coming back on, certainly seems like a loose connection there. And did you say this was in a shed or an outbuilding, or this is part of your home?
This is a separate building. It's the guy before me was a woodworker, so he built a one stall like shed, but like I said, I use it for my man cave, get it away from the kids and the family. But
yeah. And this is a unit that hangs up on the wall, space heater, and it's got a blower behind it.
Yep, exactly. And like I said, it worked fine after I punched it. I was really mad. I'm like, damn it. And I punched it, and it worked fine after that.
Yeah, it sounds like or an electrician or yourself, safely take a look at all the wiring, right? That's a loose connection somewhere along the way and or a motor that's about to go out and will need to be replaced.
Yeah, there you go, Nick. Thank you. Jim in Baraboo, your turn. Hi, Jim.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hi. I think I know what's going on with the guy who called in a little bit ago, finding the filters behind the cold air returns.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I'm a contractor. When my HVAC guy puts in the little boots for the cold air returns, he cuts them in the sheetrock, and that filter is there until the construction process is done. So when the sheetrockers are doing their work and all the rest of the sawdust and that doesn't get drawn into the system. And as soon as we're done with all the dirty work, before he comes back and he puts his the register covers on, those all come out.
Ah,
that's a great theory. I mean, it's quite possible that that's exactly what's going on. I mean, I'm a contractor too, and we generally would completely seal off the registers when we're doing most work in a home. But you could be right that particularly if some demolition or something was happening, and they did that as a precaution.
Yeah, it's a good point, Jim. Thank you, appreciate it. Russ in Pleasant Springs, we'll go to you now. Hi, Russ.
Hi. I live in an old farmhouse that I'm told was built probably about 1918 or 1920, and I have three peaks on there, one facing east, one west, and one facing north. And on the north and the west sides, the soffit underneath the eave is individual pieces of wood, maybe 3-4 inches each, and the same thing on the north side. And these have now spaces in between each one of them. And I'm wondering if back in whenever the house was built, was part of that a ventilation system for the attic, or are they just wearing out and I need to caulk all those spaces in between each individual board?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And I'm going to guess that if they're not obviously uniform, that it was not a intended feature, but it's just the wood having shrunk in its age, and maybe some potentially some dry rot or something going on. But it's hard to know without seeing it, and who knows, maybe there is some ingenious ventilation thing going on there. And even given the age of the home, that would be irregular at this point. So interesting question.
Yeah.
I'd be curious to see photos.
Yeah, for sure. Russ, thank you very much. A listener emailed another question about that furnace airflow, saying the arrow points toward the furnace during heating season. Does the arrow point the same way during the cooling season with central air?
Yes. That's the answer.
That's the answer. It always points that way. So there's a one word answer that it totally takes care of it. Go ahead, Chad.
Well, I just wanted to add that having a clean filter during the cooling season is really important because when we are cooling air, we are. The most important thing that's happening is we are dehumidifying the air that we're pulling through those return ducts. And so if you don't have good airflow during the summer months when you're trying to cool the air, you're not going to have a very effective air conditioning system. And certainly you still want returns to function in the winter too, but they're not nearly as important to the system as they are in the summer months.
Interesting. There we go. And let's see, I had another one here. A lot of listeners called in recommending the woman who had mold on her chimney. Many people called to recommend trying white vinegar. Spray it on, let it sit for 20 minutes, and then spray it off, and there you go. Comes off.
Mm-hmm. A little old
like
elbow
grease.
Yeah, a little white vinegar. Let it sit and work for 20 minutes, and then it should come off. And I forget where our caller was calling from, but it's going to be a warm weekend. This would be, if you're going to do it, this might be the weekend to do it. Get it out of the way. Do you have a recommendation? Glenn wondered for how to fix a patch where cement is falling off limestone. Chad, do you have anything?
So, well, it's probably this might be an issue of the mortar around limestone. And the one thing, it's really critical to have the right mortar for the particular stone that is, being patched. And my recollection on that is that often with limestone, I believe it's a type E mortar that we use. But again, I would, we have a couple of masons that we rely on for that. And I would definitely make sure that you're just using an appropriate mortar to patch that particular surface.
All right, there we go. Well, I tell you what, we are out of time here for the show. Chad, thank you very much. John, thank you both very much for being with us today. I really appreciate it, and look forward to another visit from you both. Thank you.
Thank you, Larry. It's always a pleasure. Great to be with you, John.
Yep, good to chat again.
Chad Spate owns Chad's Design Build. John Viner is the Director of Education at Slipstream and is a heating, cooling, and weatherization specialist. So it's great to have them back. I know Chad will be back with us in the new year for sure, so we'll look forward to that as well. Should mention, by way of full disclosure, we should mention that Chad's Design Build is one of Wisconsin Public Radio's many business sponsors, so I wanted to make that mention as well. Just looking ahead, tomorrow at 11, it's time for Garden Talk. Boy, the weeks fly. Brian Huddleston will be with us for a season roundup on the biggest plant diseases this year. That's Friday on the Ideas Network at 11 o'clock, 6 a.m. on Saturday, and of course you can join us online at any time. Love to have you do that as well. And I want to thank you so much for listening and for all the great questions, and I hope you'll stay with us right through the afternoon when there are lots of good things in store for sure. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks for listening to the Ideas Network.